Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything going on in the world of sports. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What is happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about in the land of sports. It has been a busy, busy week.
Whew, and there's
much to discuss, so definitely let's get into it. But we want to remind everybody after the show, Pat, where does everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website. Make sure to sign up on all the social media accounts. We're definitely interacting with everybody there, and there's a lot to go over this episode, so we definitely want to keep those conversations rolling. Also, I hope everybody took advantage of the TeePublic store sale this past weekend. A lot of things happening there, so you definitely want to go get some ODPH swag. And if you also feel like supporting the brand, definitely go check out the Patreon. One tier, $2 a month. It definitely supports the all the things we're doing here at the ODPH, and definitely means a lot. And we are completely blown away that we have patrons. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You want to find out about them? Well, they have a whole section on the website too, so you can definitely find out, you know, what all the cool kids are doing. Also there, check out the blog section where we are dropping reviews left and right. We have a directory which hooks you up to whatever podcatcher you want to go listen to us on. And Pat, how many providers do we have?
543,812.
I do not question him, because he is a statistician to the stars. Also at the website, check out the classified section, which has friends of the show such as 3FN Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative, and many, many more. The music section, which is blowing up lately with some of the best musicians on the planet that are loaning us their music to play each and every week. So definitely want to shout out Tom Jolu, shout out The Robots, Floodlands, Second Suitor, Brian Wolf and the Howlers, and many, many more. So if you want to find out everything going on with them, simple. It's a one-click, one-shop, boom, you're done. And if I'm forgetting anything, well, that's why I always say, if it's anything and everything, it is the ODPH. You can find it at odphpodcast.com. And on social media, use the hashtag ODPHpod. There's a lot to decipher, but we are kicking off this episode of the Sports Edition talking some basketball.
Yeah.
The season is over. We are at the playoffs. It has been a wild ride to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's much to decipher because this is dealing with the play-in tourney and all the fun stuff going on.
Yep.
So Pad is going to guide everybody through where everybody is going, if they win, if they lose, and give our predictions about who's taking home the chip.
Yeah.
Let's do it, Pad.
Yeah, so for the play-in tournament, we'll start in the East. You've got the 7th-seeded Philadelphia 76ers taking on the 8th-seeded Miami Heat. The thing to keep in mind with all of these play-in tournament games, it's a one-and-done. This isn't a best-of-two, best-of-three, best-of-seven. No, one-and-done. So whoever wins that game moves on into the first round of the playoffs to take on the 2-seeded New York Knickerbockers.
Yeah, say that one more time.
The 2-seeded, 50-32, New York Knickerbockers.
Yes. The Knicks got to 2-seed, baby.
Yeah. The loser of this matchup moves on to, I guess you call it, the next round of the play-in tournament. On the other side of the play-in tournament, you've got the 9-seeded Chicago Bulls taking on the 10-seeded Atlanta Hawks. Now, with this game, loser goes home.
Mm-hmm.
There's no second opportunity. There's no consolation prize. No, you lose, you're done.
Yeah.
The winner moves on to take on whoever loses from the 76ers Heat game. The winner of that, so it's whoever wins the 9-10 and whoever loses the 7-8, moves on to take on the number 1-seeded Boston Celtics in the first round of the playoffs. It's essentially like the NCAA tournament. You win the playing game, and then you get a number 1 seed in the first round. Hey, thanks for showing up.
Yeah, this is not something that I think anybody's looking forward to. So,
no.
But I mean, the play-in tourney, I think, in all, is a very fun thing.
It's a good concept. I think it might be able to use some fine-tuning.
Definitely can use some fine-tuning. But
in its initial stages, it's fine.
Well, especially, too, with only 8 seeds coming out of each conference, they really want to give something for the fans to be invested in, especially
right.
If you play more or less, I'm going to be very honest about it. If you play in the East, everybody, with the exception of Boston, is right around each other as far as records go. So it's tough to really decipher about who really deserves the spot in the Elite Eight, if you will.
Right.
So I think this is a fun way to get more teams involved.
Well, and I think for the fans, too, it's just a way to get them more interested. Because me personally, like, I would like, I'm not a Knicks fan, but as a New Yorker, I would like to see the Knicks do well.
Thank you.
You know, just because, hey, they're the local team. You know, but it's hard for even cat. Like, I know the diehards, you know, will watch every game, every round from start to finish. But for me, I usually don't cue in unless there's something crazy going on that, like, you know, Steph Curry went off for like 45 or something crazy happened. I usually don't key in on it. Don't really start watching until, say, the conference finals or the semifinals or whatever it is, the round before the conference finals. You know, if it's a good matchup, like I know in the Miami Heat years with Wade, LeBron and Bosch, they had a couple of years that I know they played the Indiana Pacers. I was tuned in for that one.
Oh, yeah,
in the second round. But I think it's just another way to get fans like, hey, there's more going on than just the conference finals. Watch more games.
Well, I think what helps and hurts the NBA is when you get to this stage, and I'm just going to pick on the Eastern Conference here.
Sure.
Because the West is a little more wide open, but the East, the East has unfortunately been not up to par over the past few seasons. And like, listen, they have talent there, but in comparison to how stacked the Western Conference is, it's a little lackluster. And if you want to have a national audience tuning in,
right,
you really want to give them an incentive.
Well, and especially with the East, where Boston's going to be there. The Knicks are going to be there. Past that, the Bucks, is Giannis going to play? Is he not going to play? That's still up in the air. You know, the same with Joel Embiid. Is Joel, if the 76ers are fortunate enough to make it in, you know, win two games in the playoff play-in tournament, you know, or whatever it is, you know, is Joel Embiid going to be there? So it's hard with the East, like you said, where like the talent's there, but there's so many question marks.
Oh, absolutely, because I think everybody has penciled in Boston for running away with this.
I would say probably, yeah.
And you have to think possibly, but the one thing about playoffs is literally it's a big season reset.
Pretty much, yeah.
And anybody has a shot if they can get hot at the right time. And for Boston, arguably, they're going to have a very easy first round. I'm sorry. The Hawks are not impressing me at all. Neither are the Bulls. So I don't even think that that is a relevant game.
Well, and it's not even just those teams. It's whoever the hell that comes out of that playoff tournament towards them.
Well, that's the thing.
The Hawks, Bulls, 76ers, Heat, yeah, maybe.
See, the way I see this going down is I think the Heat defeat the 76ers.
Okay.
But I think whoever loses that game is going to absolutely take care of Chicago or Atlanta. Like, that game to me, sorry fans, this is just me being honest. I just don't see how those two teams can stack up unless something freakish happens and they get on a hot streak early in that game and take it.
Yeah.
I just think it's going to be ultimately the 76ers are going to be facing the Celtics in the first round.
Two old school matchups in the first round, Celtics 76ers, and then Knicks Heat.
And and especially after the playoffs last year. Which everybody remembered playoff Jimmy. So there, I mean, and the Knicks have always had a rivalry with the Heat.
I'll say, if you're not familiar, go look up the videos of what happened in the 90s.
Yeah. So there is that little fun history there. Obviously, it's not as intense as it has been in years past.
No.
But it doesn't need to be, because the true test of what this Knicks team is going to do, kind of jump ahead a little bit, is they have to prove that they're not a fluke.
Right.
And that is the biggest question mark that this team has, even though they have played absolutely lights out when a lot of people wrote them off for dead. And this is a situation that, with Jalen Brunson, who has emerged as one of the top five players in the entire league.
Right.
This is going to be his moment to shine and really stand out and make a big splash. And especially with what he's done, considering Julius Randle is out for the season. He elected to take shoulder surgery for his injury.
Right.
And a lot of the media wrote this team off for dead.
Right.
Yet here we are in the second round or second seed in the tourney, and they could not have asked for a better run going in here. And a lot of it has to do with a late addition this season with OG Anunoby.
Mm-hmm.
When he's on the court, this team is completely different.
Right.
And this allows for Brunson to get open more. This clears up a lot for them. And it also keeps in that style of defense that Tom Thibodeau likes to play.
Right. And, I mean, just looking at the schedule, the Knicks are definitely coming in riding a hot streak. They're on a five-game winning streak. The winning streak started when they were in Milwaukee and beat Milwaukee on Sunday, April 7th, 122-109. Then on Tuesday, April 9th, they went into Chicago and beat the Bulls 128-117. Thursday, April the 11th, they went into Boston and played the Celtics and beat the Celtics 118-109. Then they had their the home game Friday, April 12th against the Brooklyn Nets, won that 111-107. And then the final game of the regular season was Sunday, April 14th at home against the Chicago Bulls, who they beat 120-119 in overtime. So if you remember the teams I was mentioning, you know, with the Eastern Conference at the start of the segment here, I believe of those five teams, four of them are in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, hey, that ain't no slouch.
No, definitely is not a slouch at all. So to see how this all just, you know, phased up, this is going to be a real test.
Uh-huh.
And this is not going to be anything easy.
No.
But like I say, for what we have going in here, I mean, what other storylines are grabbing you out of the East here, Pat?
I mean, this Cavaliers magic could be interesting to a certain degree just because, listen, I'm not expecting much out of them. And that's usually where the excitement and the stellar games show up, is when you look at it going, it should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this year the biggest headline I have is the 3-6 for the Bucks
and
Pacers. Because Giannis is hurt.
He's very questionable.
So depending on what happens there.
I mean, theoretically, the Bucks should beat the Pacers.
Oh, sure.
With or without Giannis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they absolutely should.
In theory, but then again, theory only gets you so far.
Right. And that's the whole problem that they have, is with Giannis in that lineup, I think it's a more easy one and done.
Oh, yeah. That's at least a sweep, if not like a... they lose one game.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers with Tyler Halliburton, that does help.
Oh, yeah.
But if it's Giannis and Damian Lillard...
Oh, boy.
That's a different story.
It's a different animal.
But I think the big X factor we have here, looking at it,
uh-huh.
is Doc Rivers coming in midseason as head coach.
Yeah.
Has not been the home run that I think a lot of executives and fans were thinking it was going to be.
Definitely not winning coach of the year.
No.
That's a pretty safe lock.
No, I would say I agree too. I think just unfortunately you have that much talent, you got to start producing.
Yeah.
And I think for...
It's like Eric Spoelstra in Miami. If he hadn't produced and they hadn't won a title when they did and had the success they did, you know he'd have been out of there.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where they have to really kind of look at it and go like, all right, well, what do we do to fix things here?
Because right.
they're not going to have the time.
No.
And that's going to be something that's going to be haunting them a little bit.
Right.
So looking into that factor, I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. I think the Bucks have enough to beat
mm-hmm.
the Pacers
in that
first round.
Past that, though.
Past that, I mean, yikes. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, the Cavaliers and Magic are two very young teams.
Yeah.
And for the Magic to be at the 50, that's a big win for them.
Absolutely.
Just after that, I don't know. I don't see any one of those four teams going past the rounds.
No, I don't either.
I think
if the Bucks could contend if Giannis is there,
mm-hmm.
but if Giannis isn't there or he's extremely limited, they're going to get, I don't want to say swept, but it's going to be ugly.
Mm-hmm. And I say I would love to see an old school Indiana New York Knicks second round.
Get Reggie Miller on the call.
Oh, my God, yeah. Just that would be the media hype that would need to go
Holy
here.
Hell, yeah, that'd be great.
Because as how this is stacked up, I mean, I think the Knicks are going to wind up taking the heat.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be close. Yeah. I think Jimmy Butler, though, is going to have a great run.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Butler is going to be a playoff Jimmy.
Yeah, but I think for where we're going, I think Brunson is just playing at such an elite level.
Yeah, I was looking at the highest scores for the last, five games they were on, five games they won, and Brunson was playing out of his goddamn mind. Even going back further, I mean, he scored 35 against Sacramento in a win, put up 35 against Chicago in a loss, and then the winning streak started. He put up 43 against Milwaukee, 45 against Chicago, 39 against Boston, 30 against Brooklyn, and then 40 against Chicago. The dude's playing like he's, you know, got something to prove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely playing, and he's definitely looking good, but it's just a matter of what they can do, you know, as they go forward. And,
right.
And a lot of it relies on him, but he's going to need some help. And this is where OG is going to have to really step up.
Yeah.
And plus, there's an unsung hero on this Knicks team that has really turned it on as of late, and that's Dante DiVincenzo.
Ah, DiVincenzo.
He has been playing lights out, too.
Mamma mia.
Putting on career numbers. And I think if he can stay hot, too, Josh Hart is very solid for where he plays in that lineup.
Yeah.
I think that they have a chance to really make a deep run.
Whatever they've been doing, keep doing.
Well,
it's working.
You know, I think they finally have the right players in for Thibodeau's system.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest X factor with this team. If they're not in there and they don't play defense, they don't lock it in, then I think, okay, it's a big-time problem.
Right.
And I think for where they are this year, I think they're very solid.
Yeah, good. I mean, listen, maybe they swung by Tommy DeVito's house and got some chicken cutlets from his mom.
You never know.
Maybe it's the chicken cutlets.
But DiVincenzo has been playing very, very good. He's helped take a lot of pressure off Brunson, and that's what they need. Because especially without Randall in the lineup, and Knicks fans are very divided about this.
Yeah, they are.
You know, him not being there, I know everybody said the sky was falling, but yet here we are at the number two.
And do we remember or forget, I guess, in this case, his performance in the playoffs last year?
Oh, exactly. I mean,
for those of you at home who remember, you're sitting there going, what playoff performance?
Yeah.
Because it was non-existent.
Well, I think last year there was a clash in styles between him and Brunson.
Yeah.
And I think that came back to haunt them in the worst way.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing you want with the team going now is to play better, to gel better, and look at the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, that's what they needed to do. And then especially going in, I mean, the first thing last year was the big win over the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Right.
They needed that playoff win.
Yeah.
They needed that series.
Yeah, because Cleveland had gotten, I forget who the free agent was that New York wanted at the
Donovan Mitchell.
That was it. They got Mitchell, and there was a whole lot riding on that for bragging rights.
Well, the big problem there was last year is everybody said New York needed a superstar.
Right.
And honestly,
to a degree, yes.
They're not wrong.
No.
But the big thing is, they got a superstar in Brunson.
Right.
Mitchell is great. Mitchell is probably coming as soon as he's a free agent. I wouldn't doubt he tries.
Could be.
But for what they were not willing to give up last year, everybody was really questioning about what this team was made of. And yet, they showed up. I mean, unfortunately, they ran into Miami in the second round, and Miami got hot at the right time, no pun intended.
Right.
So now the Knicks are more experienced going into this round, and that's why I think they're going to look better in this first round against Miami, unless Philly gets there. But either way, I like them to advance.
Right.
I don't think Philly is the team of old.
No, they've trusted the process a little too long, and it's starting to fall apart, if you will.
Right. So when you when you get all that in the mix, I think the Knicks have an easy way to get to the next round. I think if they have to face Milwaukee, that will be a challenge.
They're doable and winnable, but a lot easier if Giannis isn't there.
Right. And then Boston, I think, is just going to cruise. I think for, unfortunately, Boston is just too good right now.
Uh-huh.
But I think what would be the ultimate, you know, final for me is it's going to be Boston and the Knicks.
Mm.
And I think the Knicks can contend. I really do. I don't know if they have enough to get over Tatum and company,
though. Right. Well, and at that point, it's going to matter who's played more games.
Right. So it is possible. But I will say, and I hope I'm wrong about this, I think Boston winds up taking that series in six.
Okay.
And they go to the finals.
Okay.
Flipping it now to the Western Conference. I mean, do you have anything to add to that?
Just to your point with Donovan Mitchell, he's played very well this season. He averaged 26.6 points a game, 5.1 rebounds a game, and 6.1 assists per game. Had a field goal percentage of 46.2%. 3-point percentage of 36.8. You know, pretty good season. But then to your point of he might leave, that's entirely possible. He has signed a 5-year, $163 million deal when he was with the Utah Jazz. He's currently in year number 3. So he's got next year that's fully locked up and, you know, he's with the team. But after that, the 5th year is a player option. So it's entirely possible and I think entirely likely that he plays next year with the Cleveland Cavaliers, unless they try to trade him and get something, because they might be fearful he leaves in the offseason and they get jack all for it.
Well, that's something I think they really have to look at.
Yeah, oh yeah, well, it's Cleveland. So to your point, he very well could end up someplace else after next season or mid-next season. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But no, the East should be fun. It should be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody, you know, like the Cavaliers or the Magic make a run. I mean, who the hell would have thought all those years ago the Baron Davis-led Golden State Warriors would have knocked off the Dallas Mavericks? Mm-hmm. You know, anything's possible, but just the way the East is looking, it's probably going to be the Celtics and the Knicks.
Yeah, which, I mean, listen, there's no shame in that.
God, at that point, the Yankees might actually be playing the Red Sox, which, ooh, that'll be real toxic in Boston and New York.
Oh, well, you know,
oh shit.
It would be fun. I mean, just for a bunch of different storylines. I mean, Boston, New York.
I'll say, because the Yankees and Red Sox, I don't think, play until like early June.
Yeah.
It's a while.
But I think there's just so many storylines you could have there. Yeah. And especially, too, I honestly think for this Celtics team, they need this more than the Knicks.
They really do, just because it feels like they've been on the precipice and on the cusp of like having that team that can get you there since the Kyrie Irving days.
Yeah.
You know, and just perpetually year after year, oh, it's their year, oh, it's their year, oh, it's their year. And sorry, 49ers fans, but Boston Celtics are almost the NBA version of the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. You've got a great team in the regular season, but then you just lay a goose egg in the playoffs.
Yeah. It's going to be a real test for them. So Like I say, if the Knicks upset them, it would be amazing. And then I honestly, with Boston, I don't think they could have a better team than they do right now.
In the words of Kevin Garnett, anything's possible.
Oh, it is true. I mean, that's a great thing about these playoffs. Anything literally is possible. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a matter of what team shows up and what team balls out.
Yep. Then over in the Western Conference for the play-in tournament, you've got the 7th-seeded New Orleans Pelicans taking on the 8th-seeded Los Angeles Lakers.
That's so weird saying.
I know. Then the winner of this matchup goes on to face the Denver Nuggets in the first round. So good luck, folks.
Yeah.
Then you've got the 9th-seeded Sacramento Kings taking on the 10th-seeded Golden State Warriors. Again, with this, loser goes home, winner moves on in the playoff, the play-in tournament. Then you've got, so whoever loses between Pelicans, Lakers takes on whoever wins between Kings and Warriors. The winner of that matchup goes on to face the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are the number one seed in the first round. Good luck. So for your other matchups, you've got the 3-seeded Minnesota Timberwolves taking on the 6th-seeded Phoenix Suns. Then you've got the 4th-seeded LA Clippers taking on the 5th-seeded Dallas Mavericks.
Well, a few different storylines going on here.
Uh-huh.
First and foremost, I think it's absolutely wild to think the Warriors and the Lakers need a play-in to get in.
Warriors are getting old, though.
Yeah, that's
that's the thing. Like, they're kind of getting up towards like Timmy Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker, like load management time.
Yeah, but
they're getting up there.
They're getting up there, and it's weird to see after having that dominant run.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is like most players when they reach this point, you obviously start to see a decline at this point. But I think especially for Draymond, Clay, Steph, the mileage is higher just because you think of how many years they went deep into the playoffs. You know, so they were playing from, you know, what was it, like mid, end of October through June.
Mm-hmm.
How many years in a row? Like, that mileage adds up.
Yeah. But it's something that, you know, we're seeing the torch get passed, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
And that's still going to be something absolutely crazy to think about as we head into the playoffs here.
Yeah.
Because this one, I mean, I think Sacramento is a nice story.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, honestly, they could pull this off.
It could be wild. It'd be a real close game.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot closer than I think anybody's given credit for.
Right.
Meanwhile, as far as the Pelicans go, listen, I'm not doubting LeBron in that final season push, so to speak.
Yeah.
I know he's kind of alluded that he does not have much time left.
Yep.
So I think for him in playoffs, he's not the LeBron of old.
Right. I mean, the Lakers are in a real tough spot. because you win, you go and face the defending champs.
Yeah.
In the first round of the NBA playoffs. You lose, and then you got to either take on the Warriors or the Kings.
Yeah.
Neither of which is like a guaranteed win.
Right. So I think...
So we could be looking at a Los Angeles Lakers asterisk, because it's not technically the first round exit for the Lakers with LeBron. That'd be wild.
Think about this scenario.
I say asterisk first because, like I said, it's playing. It's not the actual first round, but yeah. you get it.
No, but think about the scenario. You could have the Warriors and Lakers lose first round.
Oof.
And both are out.
Sports media would be on fire.
It'd be a meltdown.
Yes, it would.
It'd be absolutely insane. But I think that would be good for the sport here.
I would, too.
Because I think the biggest story that more fans need to talk about,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't, is one Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And the story of them emerging as the number one seed with SGA leading the way.
Mm-hmm.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
And the team that they have built.
With like 102 draft picks.
Uh-huh. This is all made through the draft for the most part. Is absolutely wild to see play out.
Coach of the Year candidate?
Yeah.
I don't know who their coach is, but
I believe he did get the nomination for it, if not win. But this is where they've built a team, and they've really just established themselves as a pure threat. Chet Holmgren, who, I mean, when he's in,
right,
has now emerged as, you know, the player I think that a lot of fans were expecting to see. And, I mean, to see him paired with SGA, that's definitely helped.
Right.
And then, you know, Jalen Williams has stepped up. Like, they have a lot of talent on this team.
I looked up the Oklahoma City Thunder coach. A gentleman by the name of Mark Daigneault, Daigneault. This dude is a homer. This dude is like a, I guess you could say, a product of their system. As a coach, he was an assistant at Holy Cross from 2007 to 2010, was an assistant coach at Florida from University of Florida, 2010-2014. Then he was the head coach of the Oklahoma City Blue, which is the G League team of the Oklahoma City Thunder. He was there from 2014 to 2019. Oh, by the way, he was also the assistant coach for the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2016, strictly full-time Oklahoma City Thunder assistant from 2019 to 2020, and then he's been the head coach since 2020.
It's crazy.
That is wild.
But you know what? It definitely works out for him. And to see what they've done here. And
57-25. God yeah. damn.
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Who would have thought? Especially in that Western Conference, which, listen, it has been a battle for much of the season.
I mean, realistically, one through about five or six, you can make an argument for to reach the finals.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can rule anybody out.
No.
I even think the Clippers. I think that for me, that's the matchup I'm more excited to see in that first round of the Western Conference.
Yeah. You got Harden and Kawhi going up against Kyrie and Luka. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And like I say, the Clippers were written off for dead.
Can you imagine we get like a 3-point shooting contest between Luka and James Harden?
Well, you know, the thing about when Harden's on, Harden is very, very good. But
he said when he got traded to the Clippers, once we figure this out, it's going to get scary.
Mm-hmm. And they were the number one seed, overall for a while there.
They were in there, yeah.
Yeah, so to see that shape up like it has, it's been really fun to watch them really excel because we've said many years now.
Uh-huh.
The Clippers are supposed to be the team. They've been ready.
Right.
And we keep waiting to see it. On the other hand, the union of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic there has been one that we've been waiting to see if it was really going to be something.
Right. And it's been relatively calm, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing crazy.
No, it hasn't been anything super crazy, but it's been one that we've been waiting to see, and it seems like lately it finally has clicked in.
Yeah.
So I think we have an exciting first round here.
That one will be real good.
Yeah, and I do like the Clippers in that one.
I do too.
I mean, the Mavericks could win it, obviously, but I'm going to go with the Clippers on this one.
Yeah. Well, however many games it is, they're going to go the distance.
Yeah. And then you have, in my opinions, a very shocking 3 seed in Minnesota.
Very quietly.
Very quietly, and I think that that's something that is flying very much under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
That Minnesota has really been in the mix here, and they're not getting enough hype, except for Ant-Man.
Right.
Everybody's talking about him. But when you look in comparison to the rest of the league, I don't think that they're getting a lot of the respect that they deserve. And I think for them, they really need to come out and really take it to a Phoenix Sun team that, you know, I don't think people thought they'd be doing as badly as they are. And I think that this is going to be a series, especially for Anthony Edwards, Ant-Man, to really come in and take that next step.
Right.
Into superstardom.
Thing to keep in mind, I looked it up. This season, the Phoenix Suns and the Minnesota Timberwolves have played a grand total of 3 times. The first of which was on November 15th of 2023, where the Phoenix Suns won by the final score of 133 to 115. Clearly, defense was optional.
Mm-hmm.
Second game came on April the 5th, 2024. That one was won by the Phoenix Suns, 97 to 87. Then the final game these two teams played was on April the 14th, where Phoenix won 125 to 106. So this season, you know, this season in particular, Phoenix has had their number.
Right. But like we say, it's going to be interesting to see how this all goes in the playoffs, too.
Uh-huh. I mean,
Karl Anthony Towns is just back.
Yep.
So he's going to play a factor, especially as for Edwards, who needs somebody to give him an assistance here.
Yeah.
He's going to need all the help he can get, especially one of the more fun matchups that really, like I say, this whole series is flying under the radar right now.
Mm-hmm.
Him versus Devin Booker.
Yeah, that one would be a hell of a matchup.
That's the one. Like I say, I'm more excited to see that matchup one-on-one more so than the teams. I will say this. I don't doubt Phoenix making some noise here.
I could see Phoenix winning this. It ain't going to be pretty. You know, it ain't going to be anything like record-setting from Kevin Durant or anybody out there, but I could see it.
Well, I think Phoenix, you know, when Durant first went there, I think everybody was expecting them to just instantly be locked in.
Right. Everyone figured it was going to be like a revenge tour.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that ain't the real me. Here's the real me.
Yeah. Well, I think
60 points.
Well, I think that's the one problem that they had for anybody that was coming out of that whole Brooklyn fiasco. I think everybody was waiting to see what was going to happen here and ultimately see how this team was going to play, especially, you know, Durant has not been Durant.
Correct.
I mean, you want to take a look at his stats for the year here?
Yeah, I'm pulling them up right now. So for the 2023-2024 season, Kevin Durant in 75 games played averaged 27.1 points per game, 6.6 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game, field goal percentage of 52.3%, 3-point percentage of 41.3%, and he made 85% of his free throws.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, too, because he missed a lot of time this season, too.
A couple of games.
Right, but this is, what, like I say, but especially when they had Bradley Beal there as well,
right.
And I mean, this is where this team needs to really put up or shut up.
Yeah.
And I think that you have a Minnesota team that's very hungry and is looking to make a statement here.
Well, and especially, you know, a Minnesota team that feels overlooked
mm-hmm.
just because you think of, like, how long this crew and some of these guys have been there. You know, it's been the Golden State years and the Los Angeles Lakers years, and you had Phoenix made the run the 1 year. You know, Denver won it last year. You know, the Clippers are supposed to be really good. The Mavericks are, you know, everyone's looking at the Mavericks, and it's like, yeah, hi, we're the 3 seed. We're 56 and 26.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got to have a little chip on their shoulder.
Yeah. So I will say this. I'm going to make a bold prediction. I think the Timberwolves take that.
Okay.
I think they'll be facing the Denver Nuggets in that next round, which that'll be a fun series.
Okay.
And then, I mean, it's hard to go against the young kids there in Oklahoma City. But I think it might be too much too soon if they have to face Denver in that finals.
Listen, I'm going to say it's going to be the Thunder and the Nuggets in the finals. I'm going to say it's going to be the Nuggets.
I do too.
Hey, listen, Oklahoma City is very good. They're very talented. There's a rather large mountainous of a man down there playing center. certain back-to-back MVP winner who is very casual about his personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Nikola Jokic.
Right.
The Joker.
And I think the big thing here is it's experience over youth.
Uh-huh. And experience always wins out.
Mm-hmm. I think Oklahoma City is there. I mean, obviously,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Phenomenal season, but take a look at their record and take a look at Denver's.
Oklahoma City, 57-25. And as I alluded to, Denver, 57-25.
Right. So it's very much an equal matchup. I will take the experience factor. Denver, I think, is really taking it to heart that they're not the number one seed.
Right.
And I think that they're going to want to make sure that they get back to the finals. And if they can go back-to-back, that would be huge. I think this is going to be a seven-game series. I will go on record right now and say that. I think Oklahoma City is going to give them all that they can handle.
Right.
But I think as you're going to see why Jokic has been the MVP that he's been.
Right.
And I think that this is really going to play a factor.
Looked it up. Side note, if you need to look up your sports information and stats, I'll give you a little peek behind the curtain. Statmuse.com/ask. Very helpful. This season, the Oklahoma City Thunder have played the Denver Nuggets four times. First game was on October the 29th of 2023, where the Oklahoma City Thunder lost by the final score of 128-95. Second game was on December 16th of 2023, where the Oklahoma City Thunder won that game 118-117. Then the third game was on December 29th of 2023, where the Oklahoma City Thunder won that game 119-93. Final game came on January 31st of this year, where the Oklahoma City Thunder won by the final score of 105-100. So the numbers aside, for the season, three wins for Oklahoma City and one loss.
Yeah.
But then again, it's the playoffs. None of that matters.
Yeah, that's why it's going to be interesting to see how the young team handles the bright lights.
Yeah.
And I think that they will hang with Denver.
Because this ain't going to be some regular season matchup where, like, you're on in two markets.
Mm-hmm.
In Denver and Oklahoma City. You're going to be on, you know, on every market in the country, depending on who gets the matchup, ABC or ESPN or TNT, whatever. But you're going to be on television.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be watching.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be some fun basketball, but I think Denver ultimately punches that ticket back.
I agree. It's going to be them, and then it's going to be Boston out of the East.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, that should be a little bit of a redemption for Boston. Like I say, I got confused easily about Boston and Miami last year.
Right.
Because Boston was supposed to take it,
yeah.
And then Miami just came out of nowhere and got hot at the right time and make that, you know, crazy run.
Right.
That I think that now with Tatum and company there, like they have no other excuse.
No, they don't. It's the same position the 76ers are in. Well, yeah. Trust the process. They've been trusting the process for how long? And now the 76ers are in this seventh seed, you know, and in a play-in game.
Yeah.
You know, it's at the point where the process needs to fulfill itself. The prophecy needs to fulfill itself or get out the door.
Mm-hmm. Because they've been talking about it for so long.
Yeah.
Like I say, when Boston was in there against Golden State did what they did.
Yep.
And then last year, obviously, they had the hiccup with Miami. It's blending years because Boston, honestly.
Well, and Boston, you know, should have been there and should have won, according to some folks, since Kyrie was there.
Yeah. And that's the whole problem. Like, this team has been built to win now and hasn't gotten the job done.
Which I forget. When did he go to Boston? Let's look that up because that'll give you the real hint. He went to Boston in 2017.
Right.
So it's been 7 years of, oh, we're almost there. We're almost there. We're almost there.
Yeah. And yet.
I'm like a kid in a car waiting for vacation to the beach to get there. Like, are we there yet?
And that's the whole thing that we're going to have to wait to see. So maybe this will be Boston's year. I will tell you this. I would love if it's Oklahoma City and the Knicks.
That'd be great.
I would love that. And the Knicks would win. And then New York would.
God help the NYPD if that happens.
Yeah, I might be making a run down.
I don't believe a lot of things some fans say. But I did see the clip. I don't know how old it was, but it was Tracy Morgan getting interviewed on ESPN, TNT, one of those two. And he was saying how all the Knicks, you know, the Knicks are going to win the NBA championship and then we're going to burn this thing to the ground. And I went, yeah, that's true.
Let me put it this way to kind of put a bow on this segment. If the Knicks win the championship, that will be the most insane celebration in sports history.
So y'all remember what the Philly fans did when the Eagles won the Super Bowl? It'll make that look like child's play.
You remember when Cleveland won their championship with LeBron? It will put it to shame.
Yeah.
There is, unless you're from New York, you don't understand this.
They haven't won a title since the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, the Yankees and the Rangers and the Giants have all won, you know, even the Mets have all won championships since then, but it ain't the Knicks.
No.
There's something different.
No, Pat hit it right on the head. If the Knicks win, it's going to be one of the greatest moments in sports history, bar none. And even with the Yankees, even with the Giants, even with the Rangers, who will probably win the Cup this year too, there's nothing that touches the Knicks in New York City.
We might not see Stephen A. on ESPN for like a month.
It's going to be the absolute wildest thing you've ever seen. But they have to get there first because, like I say, otherwise they'll give me Boston deja vu.
Ooh.
Where I feel like they go every year. And then they don't, and then some team upsets them, which I tell you what, the Knicks could be that team.
That's true.
And that would be a ton of momentum going in, but I guess if I got to do that final prediction, I'm taking Denver in 6 over Boston.
I'm going to take Denver in 7 over Boston. I think it's going to go the full distance.
All right. That's our picks for the NBA playoffs. A lot to go over. I'm having deja vu because, seriously, I'm just tunnel vision about the Knicks, baby. It is orange and blue skies on my clouds, folks. That's what I am talking right here. But I'm hoping I'm wrong about my prediction. But let me know your picks. Pat wants to know your picks, too. Let's have that discussion. Hashtag ODPHpod. Who has taken home the NBA championship this season? Let's talk about it, shall we? First, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You ever wondered what comics Mark from Vale and I is into? What Zach from Left Behind's favorite MCU movies are? Well, Metalcore Nerds is the show for you. My name is Sean Mott, and here at Metalcore Nerds, we cover the latest things in pop culture, whether it be Star Wars, Marvel, DC, AEW, and everything else in between. You can listen to the show every Monday on Adobe Howl at 7 p.m. Eastern, or find it anywhere you find podcasts after it debuts on the radio station.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, and we have to talk UFC 300.
Oof.
Lot of stories coming out of this one.
Oof.
Obviously, Vegas was rocking a little bit.
Uh-huh. 20,067 folks in attendance.
Yeah.
Oof.
And they definitely got their money's worth and then some.
Saw the photo. People were, like, seated in the rafters at, like, the early prelims. Like, and I'm talking the ones that are strictly, like, those early, not the prelims, but the early ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
Well, this card was as stacked as they could physically make it.
Yeah.
And I know that the main event maybe was not a big sizzle fight for pop culture.
Sure.
But for purists of the sport, it was a great fight on paper. Mm-hmm. And answered a lot of questions. So did a couple of the other fights on the main card, but we are going to actually buzzsaw through the prelims because there's a lot to go over on this one.
Yeah, so in the featherweight division, it opened up on the prelim card where you had Diego Lopez defeat Sodiq Yusuf via TKO punches in 1 minute and 29 seconds of the first round.
Excellent knockout.
Oof.
Excellent stoppage.
Hell of a knockout.
Yeah, I was completely blown away by Lopez's performance. He stepped up in the main card, so what else can you expect?
Good for him. Then in the women's bantamweight division, we had the debut, or UFC debut, I guess I should say, of Kayla Harrison, who defeated Holly Holm with a rear naked choke submission at 1 minute and 47 seconds of the second round.
This kind of went the way we talked about on
on
the preview.
Uh-huh.
And Kayla Harrison looked dominant.
No slouch.
No slouch. Vowed by the end of the year she'll be champion.
I don't doubt her.
And got a reaction from one Amanda Nunes.
Yo.
Yeah.
Did you get Amanda to come out of retirement?
There's a video going around. I'm not saying it's just...
We're just putting the karma out there.
We're putting the karma out there because, one, that'd be the best fight I think I could think of right now that the UFC could make for Kayla. And especially if you want to get Nunes back, like that's a perfect fight. I'm just saying, I think Nunes did that on purpose to kind of test the water.
Yep.
And boy, oh boy, did it get a reaction.
Got to Nunes's attention.
Yeah. Cause Kayla was like, I don't care who's champion, if it's Raquel or Julianne Pena, she was ready to go. And I'm like, if you get Nunes, that is box office.
Uh-huh.
So we'll have to wait to see about that, but excellent debut in the UFC for Kayla.
Then in the featherweight division, you had Aljamain Sterling defeat Calvin Kattar via unanimous decision. All three judges scoring the contest 30-27.
You know what? Sterling looked good.
He looked fine.
You know, honestly, I was not sure how he was going to do with this heavier weight class. Qatar gave him all he could, but, you know, Sterling won. So yeah. Wait to see where he goes from here.
Then in the main event of the prelims, you had in the light heavyweight division, Jiří Procházka defeat Alexander Rakic via TKO punches at 3:17 of the second round.
Jiří turned it on when he needed to.
Holy shit, yeah, he did.
Granted, Rakic...
It's like he remembered he had dinner plans.
Yeah, Rakic almost got him in that first. Almost. And to see him come in, and Procházka definitely stepped up and went completely insane in that second round.
Yeah.
Good win for him. Waiting to see where he goes next in that light heavyweight division. But a hell of a way to cap off the prelims, and then we go to the main card.
So in the main card, the first fight you had was in the middleweight division, where you had Bo Nickal defeat Cody Brundage via rear naked choke submission at 3:38 of the second round.
Good test for Bo.
Yeah.
Surprised it went to the second round. You know, I think that might have been something a little new for him.
He liked playing with his food.
Yeah, but, you know, this is going to be a question now of, after this fight, where does he rank and where does he go?
I'm looking at the rankings for the middleweight division. He's not even in the top 15.
Right. I think he's...
And the rankings have moved because I'm looking at two guys at 14 and 15 who swap places. So the rankings have updated. Bo Nickal still not in the rankings.
He'll get somebody in that lower 11 through 15 spot.
I could see it.
Not sure who exactly yet, but
probably like a Paul Craig.
That'd be a good fight.
I'm just looking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what Craig is up to, but if he is healthy and able to go, I think that'd be a solid fight for him, actually.
Then in the lightweight division, you had Arman Sarukyan defeat Charles Oliveira via split decision. Two judges scoring the contest 29-28, the third judge scoring it 28-29.
Yeah, this one, close fight.
Mm-hmm.
But Arman, he looked good. He stepped up to the challenge. Was surprised at not the ending per se, but the fact that Armin did not get the title shot against Machaev. We'll talk about that after we get done breaking down the card, but I was surprised at that, and then bad loss for Oliveira.
Uh-huh.
And now the question is, where does he go from here?
Yeah.
A couple ideas come to mind, but it's the one problem you have is... that lightweight division is so stacked.
Yeah, it is.
That if you lose in the top five, it's crushing.
Yeah.
And it's nothing against him by any stretch of the imagination.
Oliveira's still number two.
Yeah, but, you know, that's going to be something we're going to have to watch and see where we go from here, because with that division being as stacked as it is.
Yeah.
Even him being at a number two doesn't really mean that much. And I know that's a wild statement to make, but if he's not getting that title shot.
Right.
And we do know who is.
Yeah, we do.
Then where does he fall into place here? Because then you're almost going to have to start, you know, I don't want to say recycling, you know, other matches, but ones that had solid finishes. I legitimately don't know.
Right.
So we're going to have to kind of sit back and relax about this one. I don't know. Like I say, I'm really stumped at where he goes next. I really am.
Right.
I could see him possibly against the winner of the or loser of the BMF title.
Could be.
That would make some sense to me, but I have to wait and see.
Then next up, you had in the lightweight division a matchup between Max Holloway taking on Justin Gaethje for the symbolic BMF title, the baddest motherfucker. Max Holloway defeated Justin Gaethje at 4:59 of the fifth round. This was the wildest shit I've ever seen.
Craziest knockout I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
Craziest.
Find the highlight if you haven't seen it. It's not hard.
No, it's definitely not hard. This is one that literally lived up to the hype of being the quote-unquote BMF title.
Uh-huh.
Because what they did is you take a look at the scorecard, and there was not a lot of grappling going on here.
No, there was not.
This was pretty much strikes. But, I mean, you take a look at how the card was until that last round.
So the one judge scored the first three rounds for Max Holloway, gave the fourth to Justin Gaethje. The second judge gave the first three rounds to Holloway and the fourth to Gaethje. Then the third judge gave the first and third round to Holloway and gave the second and third or fourth, to Gaethje.
Yeah. This was a very, very solid fight and performance for Holloway, who, I mean, I'll be honest, him at 155, I don't love.
Right.
I don't love him at that weight class. However, he really stepped up. He was pinpoint accurate in a lot of his boxing.
Yeah.
And then they did what I thought they had to do.
Yeah.
They could have coasted in that final round.
Which you see a lot.
Yeah. And Max was like, screw that.
He's done this before. He did this while UFC 199.
Yeah.
Pointed in the middle of the octagon. Let's fucking do this.
Yeah.
And just rock 'em sock 'em robots swung for the fences.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I applaud him for that.
I do too.
There's a lot of fighters that would never even attempt that.
He knows and he gets that the fans came here to get their money's worth, and it's one of the biggest cards in UFC history.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to give the fans their money worth.
And he absolutely did.
Yeah.
Because he caught...
It's the most gangster thing. He did the most gangster thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. He caught Gaethje with a clean right, knocked him out cold, and it was just the amount of punishment Gaethje took.
Uh-huh.
It broke him.
Only way this could have been... This is already phenomenal, one of my top moments I've ever seen in UFC. Only way this could have been better is if it was with one of the Diaz brothers.
Yeah.
Then it would have been just chef's kiss, perfect.
Oh, yeah. But for him, huge win. I know he immediately said after the fight he wants to go back to 145 and fight Topuria. Make that fight.
Yeah, he's earned it.
Make that fight.
He's earned it.
I don't think that there will be nobody that questions that fight. That will be literally another BMF-style fight.
Uh-huh.
And then for Gaethje, like I said, I think him and Oliveira makes some sense.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily if they're going to do that, because if he had won that match, he was going to get Machaev.
Mm-hmm.
Did not happen.
Nope.
So I think that's the only fight you can do right now.
Probably.
But it's really up in the air. It really is.
Kudos to Holloway, by the way, because Dana upped the bonuses the fighters received for this fight to $300,000 because it's UFC 300.
Mm-hmm.
Holloway earned fight of the night bonus and performance of the night bonus.
Good for him.
So he earned an extra $600,000.
They should have. That's one of the greatest fights you're ever going to see.
Absolutely.
Like that. Well, I wouldn't say maybe fights, but finishes you're ever going
to
see.
Absolutely. Add it to the highlight reel.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to the co-main event of the evening in the women's strawweight division with Zhang Weili defending her belt against Yan Xiaonan, winning by unanimous decision, all three judges scoring the contest 49-45.
Yeah, this one is the way I thought it was going to go.
Uh-huh.
But not mad about it. I mean, this is a great fight.
Yeah.
Just Wheelie's just on a different level.
Oh, yeah, she is.
So, I mean,
unless she's facing Thug Rose.
Yeah, if you're facing Thug Rose, she ain't going to win. Sorry, I'll make the rules. I just follow them.
Yep.
So, solid win for her. Interested to see where we go after this, but
uh-huh.
You know what? Like I say, this is one thing that UFC 300 reset a lot of the decks.
Yeah.
So it's not as clear cut as some might think it is.
Yep.
And I think for that strawweight division, that's a prime example.
Yeah.
So then we get to the main event.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like keep myself calm, because this main event,
oof,
I'm going to say something wild on record.
Okay.
I think Alex Pereira already punched his Hall of Fame ticket.
Could be.
I think
he did. You can make that argument.
I think he did. Because this was a question and a good one about who is the real light heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, Yuri Prochaska won the belt.
Yep.
He got hurt.
Yes.
Jamal Hill won the belt. He got hurt.
Yes.
Then you had Alex Pereira skyrocket after defeating his rival in Israel Adesanya.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had their bouts in the UFC, and obviously Adesanya did finish Pereira. So
yeah.
Pereira went up.
Yep.
And looked very, very good at 205. Then you get to this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I think if you're doubting the power of Pereira, you're clearly missing something.
Yes.
Because that guy, I don't know how he does it. I wish I had better answers.
Mm-hmm.
But he literally is just scary with the force he throws.
Right.
And this one, he looked absolutely incredible.
Yeah, he did.
And Jamal Hill, he definitely gave him all he could, but Pereira is just on a different level.
Yeah, did the second most gangster thing of the night when he got hit in the nether regions.
Mm-hmm.
And Herb Dean wanted to stop it and step in and pause the fight. And Pereira is like, nah, I'm good. Let's keep going. Boom, knocked him out.
Yeah, absolutely insane finish for him. And doing it, obviously, first round.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to put a statement on this.
Yeah, he did. He had something to prove.
Yeah. And then the scariest thing he did is after the fight, he goes, I'll be ready for 301 in May. And he wants to go to heavyweight to fight Aspinall.
I mean, listen, he finished the fight at 3 minutes, 14 seconds of the first. I don't doubt him.
Well, they're not giving it to him because he actually broke a toe.
Oh.
Yeah. I believe that is the report I read.
That'll put a hamper on things.
If I am wrong, I apologize. But I heard that he broke a toe and they are not going to clear him to do this because he was going to go fight in Brazil. And that would have been absolutely wild to see, because if he wound up winning that, he would have been a triple crown winner.
Oh, he fought the fight injured.
Okay.
And Dana didn't find out until the night of the fight.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Well, that's what I say. He's just a different dude. He is just different.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in this. Like, he is just somebody, like, you start thinking about who is going to be the fighters that step up in the spotlight. He's making a strong case for being, you know, one of the top names in the UFC.
So I got this quote from Dana White. This is from the press conference after the UFC 300 card. Quote, "You guys don't know this yet, but I'll tell you. I just found out when I went up to the in the octagon because I saw Pereira messing around with his foot. He broke his toe 2 weeks ago. He fought tonight with a broken toe. I thought he broke his toe in the fight. His team was like, no, he broke his toe 2 weeks ago. He was like, I ain't losing this opportunity for a fucking pinky toe." Close quote.
He's insane.
Holy shit.
He's
just built different.
And honestly, that's somebody the UFC can definitely build around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hell of a way to end the fight.
Yeah, they made one announcement during the card that I feel like we should mention.
Oh, yeah.
It was announced that the fight at UFC 117 between Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen would be the next fight in the fight wing of the UFC Hall of Fame.
As it should be.
Uh-huh.
If anybody doesn't remember that one. That was during Anderson's peak time.
When he was, like, nigh untouchable.
Mm-hmm. And Chael Sonnen ground and pounded him for 4.5 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Anderson only won that because Chael got sloppy at the last minute and got himself caught in an arm triangle.
Yep.
Or a triangle choke, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Literally one of the more wild moments I've ever witnessed in UFC history.
Yeah. One of the greatest comebacks, if not the greatest comeback. Oh, yeah.
No, Chael had that one. Chael gave the blueprint for how to beat Anderson.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever tried it again, too, which was weird.
Well, because that's one of those things, like, going to the ground against Anderson Silva, usually not a good idea.
No, but the thing is, if you're on that wrestling level that Chael is, there's no way that somebody that is not on that same level is going to be able to really give you a hard time, especially... with how Chael was taking down Silva at ease.
Right. I mean, I can think of a couple guys that could have if they'd gotten the opportunity, obviously. Habib. Habib just on a whole different
level. He's on a whole different
level. John probably could have. I don't know if John ever actually fought Anderson. John probably could have in his prime wrestling days, because he doesn't really wrestle all that much these days.
Mm-hmm.
George St. Pierre might have. George St. Pierre... You know, might have, maybe, I don't know.
That's always been the dream fight that never happened.
Yeah.
There for years.
Yeah.
Years.
A couple guys could have, but, you know, nobody ever really had the guts.
But that's the whole thing. Unless you're on that skill level, like, you're not going to be able to do that to Silva. But,
right.
But Sonnen was such an elite wrestler at the time that he just took him down with ease and just dominated from... you know, whatever position he was going with, whether it's side control or even mounted a couple times.
It's like the saying goes, if you come for the king, you best not miss.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously that one caused, at the time, the biggest rematch in UFC history.
Yeah.
Which still to this day, I don't understand why Chael Sonnen threw a spinning back fist.
Reasons.
Yeah. That's the only way I can explain that one. But it definitely marked its territory in UFC history because this is where you had somebody... prove that if you could sell a fight with a microphone, you can get pushed up a card.
Yep.
And I mean, there's no shame in that. Chael Sonnen does it better than anybody.
Yeah, this is true.
So I'm not faulting him. I'm not knocking it. It's, listen, this is what Chael does. He's a gangster for a reason. But amazing news to hear there. And then to cap everything, I mean, first and foremost, Pat, reaction to the fight card in general.
Great card. Hell of a job by the folks over there at UFC, because I remember we were first looking at this going, it doesn't look as good as some of the past, you know, milestone cards we've seen, but boy, did it live up to the expectations.
Yeah, no, I thought the main events really did their job.
Yeah.
And especially, too, we're so used to fighters playing it safe. I love seeing everybody go for it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they should bump up the bonuses higher more often.
Yeah,
that might have caused it. I'm just saying, just a humble observation.
Yeah.
And then obviously we got some new fights announced.
Yes. So taking place, the first one we're going to talk about is for UFC 302, which is taking place on June 1st of this year from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. The two fights that got announced for this card, your co-main is going to be the middleweight division, Sean Strickland versus Paulo Costa.
Interesting fight there, but I'm sure the trash talk will be very, very good.
It's going to be very good. Then your main event is for the UFC Lightweight Championship, Islam Makhachev taking on Dustin Poirier.
Interesting. Very shocked that Armin did not get the fight there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to plug in somebody there, Poirier is definitely worth it.
Uh-huh.
Worthy of it, I should say. And this is, I mean, I hate using this term, but this is make or break for Poirier.
Agreed.
If he doesn't get the chip this time, I think, unfortunately, he's not going to.
Probably not.
I just think, unfortunately, with all the tread he has on his tires, he needs to win this. He needs to just pull this off somehow. I know when he fought Habib, it was not exactly his best performance. Mm-hmm. I fear this might be the same case. I hope he's been working on his grappling and wrestling because he's going to need it.
Yeah.
Especially if he's going to be, you know, taking on Makhachev, because that's all he's going to be bringing to him. And if he doesn't have a good response, it's going to be a long night. It's going to be very, very long.
Then the other one that was announced, the one everyone's been waiting for, UFC 303, taking place on June 29th, 2024, from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. One fight announced for this card, but Christ, a lot of people don't need much more else announced than this. In the welterweight division, yes, folks, welterweight, Michael Chandler versus Conor McGregor.
Well, they're finally doing it. Conor is returning to the octagon as a favorite too.
Minus 130 is what it opened at.
Yeah, I mean, that's close to even.
I still don't agree with it.
I don't agree with it either.
Because here's the thing. It's been a while since Conor's fought, which is the norm for him these days.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time this fight goes down, let's just, you know, round up and call it even. It will be almost exactly 3 years to the day that he last fought. His last fight was against Dustin Poirier at UFC 264 on July 10th, 2021. This decade, he has fought three times.
Mm-hmm.
Once against Donald Cerrone, on which he won TKO. That was on January 18th of 2020 at UFC 246. He lost to Dustin Poirier the first time via knockout. That was on the 24th of January, 2021. Then his last fight, as I alluded to, was lost with a leg injury to Dustin Poirier at July 10th of 2021. The man has not fought consistently. And I'm talking like, you know, more than once every 3 years since 2016.
Yeah.
He fought three times in 2016. He fought on March 5th, where he lost to Nate Diaz via rear naked choke submission. He beat Nate Diaz. Then he came back and beat Nate Diaz via majority decision in August of that same year. Then he knocked out Eddie Alvarez in November of 2016. Then he went off and did his own other things before he came back in 2018 and lost to Habib. The man has not fought consistently in 8 years.
Yeah.
And he's now 35 years old. Let's see when his birthday is. He turns 36 in July. Okay, so it'll be just shy of his 36th birthday. You know, you don't get much to the, you know, disagree and kind of contradict what Mike Tyson is doing, because if you've seen his training videos, they're scary as all shit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get faster as you get older. You might be able to stay the same, but you tend to slow down just a little bit. And as we've said before, this goes for pro wrestling, this goes for boxing, and this certainly goes for MMA. Training is fine, and sparring is okay, but it don't mean shit to the actual thing. When a guy's in the octagon actively trying to take you down or take your head off. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, going up against Jake Gyllenhaal for a movie is not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I got no disrespect for Conor McGregor, you know, in the octagon, one of the best to ever do it. Hell of a performer, hell of a fighter, but just favorite at this point. Stop.
The only way I see them doing this as a favorite, and this is just my unofficial ODPH guess.
Sure.
They know that Chandler will throw hands with him.
Absolutely.
At 170.
Of Chandler's 23 wins, 11 are by knockout.
So that being said, Case, it's a lot of it going on the hope that Connor is back to being the Connor of old instead of just being Connor is old.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that last performance we saw against Dustin Poirier, we saw, unfortunately, the state of Connor that is going to be the norm at this stage.
Yeah, because the thing you got to remember with that Poirier fight, because, again, it's been almost 3 years since that fight happened, that was a leg injury after the first round.
Yeah. He's just not really into fighting per se.
He's got other business ventures, which, hey, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, do you and venture out. If you want to get into Hollywood, okay, that's fine. But just he's not the same guy.
Right. And I think that for him to try coming back at this age.
And even the win against Cerrone. That was Cerrone at the end of his career.
Right.
You know, that was 4 years ago. So you can argue his last legitimate. When I say legitimate, I mean, hey, that was a hell of a win. You know, you don't got to really asterisk it a little bit. It's Eddie Alvarez, and that was November 12th, 2016.
Yeah, no, his prime years are gone.
Yeah.
It is what it is, folks. For Connor,
he tried wrestling Habib, and that's a fucking mistake.
Well, the whole Habib thing, Habib knew what he was doing. And
Was toying with him.
There was a little incentive on that one.
Yeah, there was.
The whole nonsense that went down. So this is going to be a situation for Connor that, the only chance he's got is if Chandler wants to put on a show with him and stand in the center of that cage and throw hands.
Which is what they're going to do, because both of these guys' wins are primarily knockouts.
Well, that's what they're going to have to do. I mean, Chandler can wrestle.
Oh, yeah.
It's just going to be a matter of, is he going to want to take Connor down and play it safe? I don't think he's going to. I think that Connor and him are going to stand in the center of that cage, and that's where Connor's going to clip him. And then after that, everybody's going to say, oh, give Connor a title shot. No. Connor is now at that stage where Masvidal is, Nate Diaz is.
Yeah.
I think that those guys are great fighters, and they'll put on shows, but I think if you want to say, are they back to full-time competition, I don't think so.
Right.
I think they're more built for the marquee matchups, and I think that that's where they'll excel at.
Sure.
So, in fact, I'll even say this. If the UFC can book it, I'd give Masvidal to McGregor.
See, here's what I think is going to happen. I think Chandler's going to win this. But Chandler's going to have to weather the storm, toy around, and maybe do a little bit of dancing and drag Connor into deep waters. Because if you try and go up against Connor in a straight boxing fight, it's a coin toss who could win that matchup either way. Let's give Connor his flowers. Mm-hmm. But the thing you got to remember is we've been harping on Connor like, oh, he's not consistent. He has not fought into deep waters. And when I say deep waters, past the third round since he lost to Habib in 2018.
Yeah.
I think if Chandler is able to drag Connor into deep waters and keep it competitive and keep it close, we might see Connor gassed by the time you get midway through the fourth.
Yeah.
Or even early into the fourth. And at that point, if Chandler's been conservative with his gas tank and he's got plenty left, that's when he can go, all right, you know, to borrow the term from NASCAR, time to go.
Yeah, that's going to be his only option.
Yeah, because in a boxing match, I don't think he can beat Connor.
No.
But if he can drag it into deep waters and toy with him a little bit, then he can pull it off.
We'll have to wait and see how that all plays out, but a lot of UFC news to talk about, so definitely hit us up on that hashtag ODPagePod. What is your thoughts coming out of UFC 300? What's the takeaways that you have concerning Conor McGregor returning? And then what about that lightweight title match announcement? Let's talk about it, shall we? But let's get a quick breakout. We'll be right back.
Do not adjust your dial. Or, well, your phone. Your watch or whatever the heck you're using to listen to the awesome podcast you're currently listening to. I am the Duke of Nerds, Tyler Mack. And I am here to tell you that being a nerd can be a bit overwhelming. Especially after 30. Life moves pretty fast in our nerd culture, and if you don't take the time to notice things, you miss out. That's why I'm here. As your Duke of Nerds, I am charged with educating, enlightening, and entertaining you on all things nerdy. I do it by running the 30 and Nerdy podcast. 30 and Nerdy is a Badcast Company production and currently playing wherever you cast your pod. Follow along each episode using the hashtag 30andNerdyPod. And check out what all is going on at 30andNerdyPodcast.com. Whether it's DC, Marvel, comics, or video games, I have got you covered. So tune in now. Cheers to you, nerds.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, time to talk a little pro wrestling.
Hell yeah.
So it has been an interesting 24 hours in the land of WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously coming off the heels of WrestleMania, there's been a lot of storylines going on.
Yeah.
And obviously we alluded to last week that there was going to be footage from AEW.
Yeah, there was.
So, Pat, I'll give the floor to you. What do you feel like kicking off with? There's a lot.
Let's start with the good. Let's start with WWE.
Okay. So WWE came in with a SmackDown after WrestleMania, and very big storylines coming out of that, but none were as large as the introduction of Bloodline 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we saw Solo Sikoa step into the spotlight.
Uh-huh.
More or less a Roman Reigns is no longer the head of the table.
Right.
Because losing...
There's got to be consequences.
Yeah, there's consequences for losing, even though he is 0-42 since defeating John Cena at Crown Jewel.
This is true.
I digress. It is what it is.
Reasons.
But we did get the debut, the long-awaited one, of one Tama Tonga, who came in to help the beatdown and subsequently write-off of one Jimmy Uso.
Yeah.
What was your reaction to this, Pat?
Wasn't surprised by it because he'd been spotted in Detroit earlier in the day, so I knew it was going to happen. But I'm excited to see it. You know, he came in looking like a monster and destroying Jimmy Uso. And the storyline I figured would be wrapping up. They'd be ending things with the Bloodline. They'd be going their separate ways. But you know what? They found some extra life. They found a new chapter for this story. And I got to say, I'm more interested in this than I think at this same time with them last year after WrestleMania. And that's simply because there's so many unknown factors with this. What's going to happen with Jimmy? Is Jay going to get involved in some capacity and try and help his brother? Because, you know, hey, that, at the end of the day, that's his brother. What the hell's going on with Solo? Is he doing this of his own volition, or is a certain final boss calling the shots?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the hell's Tama Tonga? We know they've also signed Jacob Fatu.
Yes.
The other Uso brother. Yeah, there's more. You know, is he going to get involved in this? You know, are we going to have, you know, Jimmy and Jacob going up against Solo and Tama Tonga at SummerSlam or something? Are we going to get like a Bloodline Civil War Survivor Series?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I'm interested to see where this goes. And then you got Paul Heyman, who's fearing for his life.
Yeah.
And needs a new phone.
It makes a lot of sense, too. I don't believe Jacob is brothers.
Oh, okay.
With them, but he is family, too.
He's though. Family.
And obviously, if you haven't seen Jacob Fatu wrestle, he is phenomenal.
The
stuff he can do at his size will absolutely blow you away. So huge win for WWE.
Yeah.
And obviously enhancing the Bloodline storyline, especially without Rock and Roman. Everybody's kind of curious.
Yep.
This is what Paul was alluding to, that we're only in the third inning.
Yeah.
So we all thought it was based around the belt. It has nothing to do with the belt. So...
it's all about family.
We'll have to see, indeed. Yeah. Oh, Vin Diesel could only make an appearance. Reasons, folks.
Yeah, maybe someday.
Right. But then we go to Monday Night Raw.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately started off on very bad news.
A little somber, yeah.
Yeah, the one Rhea Ripley is going to be vacating her women's title.
Yeah.
She unfortunately has an injured shoulder. Hearing different reports of the severity, but it looks like she's going to be out for a few months, so they're making the belt move.
Yep.
This fits perfectly in with storyline because Liv Morgan is on her quote-unquote revenge tour.
Uh-huh.
So this is going to set up an interesting dynamic for who is going to get the belt. I don't know if they're going to do a tournament.
They have not said, so yeah, it's kind of up in the air. I will say after the promo recut on Monday night, I fear for whoever has that belt when she comes back because she's going to destroy them.
Mm-hmm. And it's really going to be a great storyline with her and Liv.
Yeah.
So I think trying to spin this into a positive, I think that there's a lot of things that are going to be beneficial to Liv when Rhea comes back.
Yeah.
Obviously, losing Rhea hurts, and we wish her a speedy and healthy recovery.
Absolutely.
And then we got another return from one Celtic Warrior.
Yeah.
Sheamus returned. It's been a while, I think, since August.
August of last year. I think they said it was like 8 months.
Yeah. So he looked good. I know some people are complaining that he looked a little bigger than usual. Listen, he still can go in that ring. It's
he
fine.
Picked up Ivar, held him on the second belt or turnbuckle, and then just kind of stood there.
Yeah.
That was the freakiest thing I saw all night. Holy shit.
Yeah, I don't care how big he looks. He's fine. Yeah. And like, aesthetically, he's doing everything that we know Sheamus to do. So, like, listen, that's the only thing that matters to me. It was just weird seeing that was an online talk this week.
But doesn't take much.
Unfortunately, Twitter was an interesting place this week, and I'm not going to get into that nonsense. Just if you don't have anything nice to say, kindly don't type it, because you won't do that in real life. I'm just going to leave that as my official PSA for that. We did get to see the new tag team titles.
Yeah, which kind of figured. You know, they came back at a commercial. And we're doing it. This was after the Sheamus Ivar match, and they're doing another. I'm like, holy shit, we're doing another announcement. But then you saw the table in the ring with the cover over it. Like, oh yeah, hey, new belts. That makes sense. I gotta say, I dig the belts.
Mm-hmm. I would say the belts look good.
Yeah.
And obviously, the Awesome Truth came out.
Holy shit, this was amazing.
I mean, Pad, you found out something.
Well, what did I find out? Oh yeah, fucking R-Truth is fluent in French Canadian.
Yes. Amazing segment.
Oh my god, yeah, no, that was amazing.
Yeah, no, that was
he got confused Triple H for a magician. I've seen people pull rabbits out of hats, I've seen him pull birds out of hats, but that man pulled a title belt out of thin oxygen.
Yeah. R-Truth he's a legend, folks.
Triple H was trying so hard to not break.
Yeah. So it was a great segment to build up for the Triple Threat, which crowned a new number one contender.
Uh-huh.
A fantastic match. DIY, though, is going to be your number one contenders, and they get their title shot next week.
Next week.
I'm happy, but I'm not, because I don't think they're going to wind up winning.
I know. I want them to win, too, but probably not.
I just don't think it's going to happen. And then they started doing a little more storyline development. I know some people were saying like the rest of the card was kind of okay.
They're building, and they're kind of in a holding pattern until the draft.
Right, because that's the big thing that was everybody has to remember. With the draft coming up, you're only going to see certain storylines get advanced.
Right.
Because we only have a couple weeks.
Right, and especially the next pay-per-view is in a couple weeks, and we know some of those matches.
Yeah, especially, too, with everybody saying about Cody making it on all the shows. Yeah, because we don't know what show he's going to officially end up on.
Well, I mean, for now, after the promo he cut last night, it sounds like he's going to be SmackDown exclusive.
Right.
Which makes sense, because Raw's got Damian Priest as its title holder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which...
That was kind of Cody's farewell.
Yeah, which, listen, I have no problem with.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It makes complete sense.
He's got a wife and a young kid.
Yeah.
Can't be everywhere all at once.
Right. I mean, that's going to be the one thing with the titles now, is you're going to have two champions defending on two shows.
And yeah.
Listen, nothing is wrong with
consistently
that at all.
Consistently as well.
Right.
No month-long hiatus.
But then we get to the main event.
Yeah.
Because this is the one I think everybody's talking about. This one generated a lot of buzz on social media, and it was the highly anticipated Intercontinental title championship match against Chad Gable and Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
Pad, let's first and foremost talk about the MVP of this match, the camera work for the intro.
Oh, my God. Kevin Dunn is somewhere screaming right now, because the match before this one was Jey Uso taking on Finn Balor. Jey Uso won. Shenanigans ensued. Jey got out of there, walked up the stairs of the arena, the Bell Center, walked into the concourse, and then was walking down the concourse with fans there. They weren't doing the typical, oh, we've got security here keeping you from the wrestler. No, they let the fans intermix and intermingle, which was awesome. One dude got yeeted out of existence. Go back and watch the footage.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like, what the hell are we doing? It's one long continuous show. We're like, where the hell are we going? And goes outside. Now who's standing out there? Sami Zayn. He tells this wonderful story how he first came to this arena to watch wrestling 25 years ago. And now he's coming back 25 years later as a champion. And Jey just goes, hey, go get him.
Yeah.
And then he goes, the camera does a 180, turns and goes behind Sami, follows him back into the same arena they just came out of. All seamless and fluid. No stopping. Follows Sami in there. All the meanwhile, people are like, oh, Sami Zayn. They're going nuts because, hey, hometown hero. And then right as he gets up to the entryway into the arena, his music hits.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd goes nuts. Oh, my God. The cinematography with this was incredible.
Yeah, this is prime example of the new era of Triple H.
Kevin Dunn, eat your heart out.
Yeah, phenomenal way to hype up this match. It definitely captured the energy of the Montreal crowd. Yeah. Obviously, Sammy's hometown, the history there. The last time we were there, obviously, I think everybody remembers Elimination Chamber.
Yes.
And, you know, the vibe there carried through. Him and Chad Gable had a great match. And Sami Zayn wound up winning. Now, the only fault I had with this match is he did not really sell the Huluva kick, like the pain he was in running. He kind of ran okay.
I think Suplex City might have a new mayor.
Yeah.
Sammy threw like 15 of these things.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But at the end of it, Sammy wins.
Yep.
Does the handshake with Gable.
Raises Gable's arm.
Yep. Goes outside, greets his family, his wife, and then while he's hugging his wife.
Mid-hug.
Yep. Chad Gable comes up and gives him a German suplex.
Oh, my God.
And then starts the beat down of him.
Yeah.
This was excellent storytelling.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, which, I mean, for Chad Gable, I think him going back to being a heel works.
Uh-huh.
I think some people were mad that he's been a face for a little while and whatever he's doing with Alpha Academy. I think this plays into where he's very strong at.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a phenomenal wrestler. He needs to be, you know, in that same kind of Kurt Angle heel type.
Yeah, which I don't think we've ever seen him as a heel. If he has, it's been a while.
It's been brief, but I mean, obviously, let's face it, since he was on the main roster under former management, we had stuff like Shorty G.
Yeah, that's true. His anger's been building a while.
Yeah, so the fact that he's now allowed to do this.
Yeah.
I'm completely fine with this.
Yeah.
I know online some people were saying about pairing him with the Creed brothers and doing a new Team Angle type deal.
Well, saw two tweets. One is from Chad Gable. This was tweeted today as we record, and it includes two photos of him attacking Sami Zayn after the main event. And he said, quote, "Don't kid yourselves. You would have done the same thing," close quote. But no, where everyone's getting the rumors and speculation comes from Julius Creed himself on Twitter. Where this morning, again, he tweeted, quote, "Ready, willing, and ...
Well, it makes sense because during the pre-match, they were working out with him in the ring.
Uh-huh.
Noted it was not Alpha Academy.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think they need to do that with the Creed brothers. And if they want to have Ivy Nile turn on Maxine,
right,
that's perfectly fine, too. I think there's a lot of potential to do some things here. Not a Diamond Mine 2.0, but, you know, a Team Gable.
I mean, listen, there's clearly going to be some shenanigans going on because Akira Tozawa tweeted last night, quote, "I trust you because you're my coach."
Yeah.
Close quote. So what the hell's going to happen to Otis? It's going to be weird. I'm here for it, though.
You know what? I think he gets moved from the draft.
That could be.
I think he goes somewhere else. I think maybe not a full refresh for his character, but he's going to get something.
Yeah.
And obviously they ended on that note and really have social media talking.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very good to see. Everybody is talking about angles. They're not overemphasizing about other nonsense because, well, there was something that happened last week.
Boy, was there ever.
Yeah, which we dived in very heavily on Wrestling Night Live. So, Pad, do you want to add anything to it since you are here?
Yeah, so for anyone who isn't familiar, AEW, after CM Punk went on the Ariel Helwani show and talked about what happened at All In between he and Jack Perry, Tony Khan and the powers that be decided, you know what? We're going to air the footage from All In, you know, but they never said what. And we were kind of left, everyone kind of jumped in and was like, well, it's probably going to be the footage between CM Punk and Jack Perry, because we knew from the get-go, or relatively soon after, that there was security cameras in the gorilla position and that there was footage of this incident. So everyone kind of figured, oh, it's probably going to be the footage between Punk and Perry. But then as the days went on, because they announced this, what, on like Thursday, Friday, something like that?
They announced it over WrestleMania weekend.
That's what it was. You know, so as the days went on and time went on, people started to speculate, well, maybe it's going to be, you know, the digital exclusive footage of the Bucks talking to FTR backstage. Now that was never shown on TV. It might be that. Maybe it's going to be, you know, some sort of SNL sketch where it's, you know, the Bucks playing, you know, somebody, and then you get a couple other guys on the roster and they do like an SNL sketch. Mm. Wednesday rolls around and it was none of the wool pulled over our eyes. It was the straight footage minus audio, because I didn't have audio, of what happened between Jack Perry and CM Punk. And what then happened is a lot of the internet went, that's it.
Yeah.
This is all it was. You know, Ariel Helwani or somebody from his team even went so far as to line the footage up with the audio and the video from his interview with CM Punk. And it matched up verbatim.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess where I land on this is, what the fuck did that get you? Because the other thing that happened afterwards, they started DMCAing or taking down anyone who was posting the footage. When it came to uploading the clip or video of what happened, because, you know, WWE does this, AEW does this, they'll put up clips or videos of what happened for segments throughout the show. They put up the video for the Bucks airing the footage, but it was them introing the video. And then it cut right to after the video ended. They never put the video up. So I guess we're like, what the fuck was the point of this? Like, if Punk was still, quote unquote, signed with them, just they, oh, you know what? We got to fire you, air quotes. You know, you can't be around anymore. And that led to him coming back and having a match with either the Bucks or whoever, that, or Jack Perry or whatever else. I would totally understand this. I'm like, oh, okay, this is just a way to work him back in and bring him back from being, quote unquote, fired. But he was fired from AEW. He's with WWE. He showed up at Survivor Series, wrestled on a number of occasions for WWE, including the Royal Rumble, and was at Philadelphia for WrestleMania all week, you know, that week. It wasn't a fever dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess the thing with this is, so at the end of the day, what the fuck was the point of this?
Well, the argument is going to be that they wanted, you know, to get some momentum back from WWE. And
why?
Because the whole thing is, let's be honest. The divorce from CM Punk has haunted AEW. The all-out brawl out has definitely had varying fan opinions about, you know, what went down that day.
I mean, because the thing you got to remember is CM Punk has not been on anything AEW related, and I'm not counting this past week's Dynamite.
Sure.
That don't really count.
Right.
He has not done anything for AEW since August 27th of 2023 when he was at All in London.
Right.
That was 8 months, 8 months ago, 252 days. If you want to get real specific, over 21 million seconds ago.
Yeah.
Why the fuck are you focusing on a guy who isn't on your roster, isn't on your payroll, and isn't doing anything to pop a rating?
In my opinion, they did it to obviously get some momentum back towards them. I think that, in my opinion, they felt that by showing this video that there was going to be opinions cast about him.
A lot of folks, because I did catch some clips from Busted Open Radio, they took calls the night this happened and the day after. Almost nobody that called Busted Open Radio said, oh, this changed my opinion or stuck up for AEW on this. They all agreed. Anyone who called was like, yeah, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And I agree with them because, listen, I am not the biggest AEW fan. I don't watch. I tried. Not for me. But I never ruled out the possibility of going back, maybe popping in and watching a card here or there. Because let's be honest, they got a card coming up on April 21st. That's a, even for me, not a bad card. It's a good-looking card. You've got Samoa Joe against Swerve Strickland for the AEW World Championship. Tony Storm versus Thunder Rosa for the AEW Women's Championship. Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson. That's a fucking main event anywhere else on the planet. Mm-hmm. Belt or no belt. Okada versus Pac for the AEW Continental Championship. Holy fuck. Like, that's a legitimately good. You've got the Young Bucks versus the FTR. I'm sorry. Stupid ass. Footage aside, you don't need to set up that feud. That's a feud that sets itself up. Julia Hart versus Willow Nightingale for the TBS Championship. Really not an opinion on that one, but hey, for the folks that are excited for it, you know, good for you. Then you've got Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe versus the House of Black in a trios matchup. Damn, that's a good matchup. You know, so the ones I'm going off of, there's one match and I'm like, yeah, whatever. That's a hell of a good card, but no, you're sitting there focusing on nonsense, you know, high school lunchroom drama and what somebody may or may not have said about you on the Pat McAfee show with Triple H and Will Ospreay. Let's keep in mind, folks, he never said Will Ospreay. He might not have even been referring to Will Ospreay, because the thing we got to remember, Yes, AEW has signed Will Ospreay recently. Mm-hmm. They also signed Okada.
Yeah.
They also signed Mercedes Moné. You got to also remember, he was in, I'm willing to bet and probably a safe assumption, he was in charge of who they signed and who they were going after when he was running NXT. He could have been thinking of someone from his NXT days that, like, hey, you know what? We really wanted that person, but they decided to go elsewhere. Everyone just jumped to the conclusion that it was Will Ospreay. So, hey, thanks for the free press and thanks for the free footage when you should have been focusing on your own thing. You know, but it was just asinine. There was just no reason for
it. Well, that's the whole point about it. And just kind of tie everything up with a bow here. That AEW tried taking a shot for whatever reason. And
it was petty and childish. And, yeah. And for me, like I said, I don't watch AEW. I keep an eye on it. You know, I never ruled out going back and watching something coming up that looked really good. But for this to happen and all this nonsense, boy, it's made it real hard for me to want to sit there and go watch and support childish nonsense.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, honestly, that's the opinion you have about it, and I have to agree with it. Like I say, it was just petty, and it backfired badly, in my opinion, because it didn't – I don't think it got the reaction that the powers that be wanted it.
No, and it didn't get the reaction from the fans it wanted, because I know at one point, you know, the video of the Bucks introing the video, and then after the video had, like – 17 had like a way more dislikes than it had likes on the video. I know Reddit, which when AEW airs is very pro AEW. At the start, when right after it happened, it was very, oh, this looks good for AEW. All that was great. Oh, that was this. It very quickly swung back in the other direction, and everyone was kind of in agreement. Yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah, because if that was supposed to help get over the angle with the Bucks and FTR, it failed. It was supposed to get Jack Perry over to bring him back from
I could understand airing the footage if the Bucks were there, they were in Gorilla, but they tried spinning this whole story of, oh, well, it happened and we got told and we got very distracted. And, you know, we lost our match because of it.
Yeah. Like I'm
sure now being one of the founders of the companies and quote unquote EVPs, I'm sure they were told. I don't doubt that for 1 second. But to sit there and then try and say, oh, we got distracted. We lost our match because of it. Stop.
Well, they were trying to spin it into an angle, which, like I said,
if you were there, I could understand it, and I could kind of understand it and kind of spin it a certain way. But with this, they weren't even there.
No, that's the whole point. They tried spinning it into an angle, which was even worse.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. They completely misfired on all accounts. Because it didn't do anything for Jack Perry. That the minute he returns on camera, guess what? Everybody is going to be chanting CM Punk, which is a disservice to him.
Well, and contrary to other reports, they weren't booing CM Punk. They were chanting CM Punk, and all it did for Jack Perry was his merch sold out that same night.
Yeah, which, I mean, congratulations, but you're still going to hear CM Punk get chanted in every building you go into from here on out.
The Bucks will. FTR might. I don't know. But the Bucks are certainly going to hear CM Punk chants. You know, so at the end of the day, what were you trying to do? Set up this feud and build this angle between FTR and the Bucks that really didn't need? No. All you did was bring focus onto another company that had their biggest week in wrestling history that I know some people were thinking they held off on the documentary because of this. No, they just got so much more footage than they anticipated. They're taking some more time to put it out there. Mm-hmm. You know, but it was just stupid and childish and petty. And Tony Khan needs to grow up.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if he was the one to call the shot on it, it was just a misfire completely.
Yeah, agreed.
So we'll just kind of leave it at that. And AEW, just focus on your own business. Don't worry about your competitor, because now you give them free advertising and they have a lot to talk about this.
And how asinine does this look the week after Adam Copeland comes out and cuts that, like, hey, we focus on us and focus on the good we're doing.
Yeah.
And then you go and do that.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Yeah, so focus on building up Dynasty this week, and I would not even address what you did, and just move on from it and take that L in our opinions. But a lot of pro wrestling to talk about this week, so definitely hit us up on the hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts about the post-WrestleMania moments on SmackDown, Raw, the changes that are happening there, the Sami Zayn match that went down in Montreal? And if you want to talk some AEW, we'll talk some AEW with you. But if you want even some more in-depth coverage, definitely make sure to turn into Nerd Initiative Wrestling Night Live Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube and streaming services. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Tom from Tom Joe Lou.
This is Matt from Sideman Sounds.
And you're listening to ODPH Podcast.
Wanna go where no one knows my name, to the desert, the oceans, or the plains.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Pad, what you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. First of which is the local minute, and I'm going to talk some Binghamton Black Bears hockey. Looking at the standings, because the regular season is now officially over, one final week, Binghamton finishing in first place.
Let's ride.
So through 56 games played, the Binghamton Black Bears finished with 35 wins in regulation, 10 losses, 7 losses in overtime or shootout. They had 1 overtime win and 3 shootout wins. Finished in first place with 120 points. Motor City finished in second with 97 points. Danbury finished in third with 90 points. Watertown finished in fourth with 61, and Elmira finished in last with 60 points. Looking at the schedule from the last week, they had just the 2 games. One was on the road, one was at home. Friday, they were on the road playing the Danbury Hattricks, where they won by the final score of 4-3 in overtime. Then they came back Saturday, 7 o'clock, and played the Elmira River Sharks at home, where they won by the final score of 4-3. Now, regular season is over. The playoffs start for the Federal Prospects Hockey League, and we do have our quarterfinals matchups. So, on one side of the bracket, you have got Columbus taking on Mississippi. These are best of 3 series. You've also got the Carolina taking on Port Huron. Then you've got in the other matchup, you've got Motor City taking on Danbury. And you've got the Binghamton Black Bears taking on the Watertown Wolves. Mm. Now, this is a best of 3. The first game is Friday, April 19th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. That'll be on the road in Watertown. Game 2 will be Saturday, April 20th at 7 o'clock Eastern. That'll be in Binghamton. And then Game 3, if necessary, well, by that point, if necessary, would be Sunday, April 22nd at 6 o'clock Eastern, and that would be in Binghamton. So for more tickets, information, all that good stuff, BinghamtonBlackBears.com. And we're going to talk a little bit of Rumble Ponies, because they are in the early stages of their regular season. And looking at the standings, not so hot of a start, but it ain't how you start, it's how you finished. Mm-hmm. Currently sitting in, what is this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th place with a record of 3-5. They're behind Somerset, who are the Yankees affiliates, Portland, who is the Boston affiliate, New Hampshire, who is the Toronto affiliate, and Hartford, the Colorado affiliate, running away with things, 5-2. Looking at their schedule from this past week, however, had a series on the road against Erie. They lost the game on Tuesday by the final score of 2-0. Came back and won on Wednesday, though, by the final score of 4-3. Thursday game got postponed because of rain, was made up on Saturday. And then also the game on Friday was canceled because of rain. I'm sure they'll try and make that up some point later in the year. So they had a doubleheader on Saturday. They won the first game by the final score of 9-2. Then they lost the second game by a final score of 6-7. Came back on Sunday and lost by the final score of 5-3. This week they're at home for a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 game series against the Reading Fightin' Phils. First game is taking place on Tuesday, April 16th, 6:05 p.m. Eastern. That'll be Jackie Robinson Day for the minor league baseball. I know Major League's just had it the other day. Mm-hmm. But that'll be the one where all of the players on the field and the managers and whatnot will be wearing the number 42 in honor of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier and making his major league debut. April 17th, which is a Wednesday, 6:05 p.m. Eastern. You got that going on. Then Thursday, they're playing at 6:05 p.m. Eastern, again, against the Fightin' Phils. Then you've got Friday, April 19th, 6:05 p.m. Eastern. That'll be book club night.
Okay.
The Binghamton Rumble Ponies and McDonald's Mac Clark are recognizing local students who've read 10 or more books. For more information on how your school can be part of book club, there is an email you can reach out to Amy Fancher at amyf@bingrp.com for more information on that. Then you come back on Sunday, 1:05 p.m. Eastern. That is another Kids Eat Freets. Kids Eat Free Sunday. So that is where kids 12 and under will receive a voucher for a hot dog and a small soda at the stadium. It's also STEM/Steam Day. It says, join the Binghamton Rumble Ponies for an educational afternoon full of science, technology, engineering, art, and math. The Rumble Ponies will be joined by members of local community organizations with demonstrations on the concourse. It's also a senior stroll Sunday. So definitely get a chance to check them out this weekend. Weather should be a little bit nicer than it has been the last couple days.
Yeah.
Because after this week, they're on the road next week, and they won't be back until the end of the month. So for more tickets, information, all that good stuff, bingrp.com. Then we got to talk a little bit of baseball, Major League Baseball, because we got an update on a story we said we'd keep you updated on as soon as information became available. And boy, did we get an update on the Shohei Ohtani, Ipe Mizuhara story. Reading from an article on ESPN.com, quote, the former interpreter for Shohei Ohtani stole more than $16 million over 2 years from the Los Angeles Dodgers superstar to pay off gambling debts to an illegal sports book, according to an affidavit filed by federal authorities Thursday. Federal authorities filed a complaint accusing Ipe Mizuhara, 39, of bank fraud, which can carry a maximum fine of up to $1 million and or up to 30 years in prison, according to federal sentencing guidelines. Quote, I want to emphasize this point. Mr. Ohtani is considered a victim in this, U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada said during a news conference in Los Angeles. Estrada added that there was no evidence Ohtani had any knowledge of Mizuhara's gambling activities or use of his bank account to pay his debts. He said investigators combed through years of text messages between the two and found no discussion of gambling. Quote, Mr. Mizuhara used and abused that position of trust in order to plunder Mr. Ohtani's bank account to the tune of over $16 million, Estrada said. Mizuhara is expected to appear in U.S. District Court on Friday afternoon, during which an arraignment date will be set. According to a spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office, Mizuhara will likely be released on bond and is not expected to enter a plea deal during the hearing, the spokesperson said. Mizuhara's lawyer, Michael G. Friedman, declined to comment. So a little bit of a crazy update on this, because it also came out that Mizuhara won $182 million, I think it was, $182 or $184, lost $140 million. So the dude was $40 million in the hole. Mm-hmm. There's also stories and information coming out that, you know, he had changed the phone number and the email account associated with Shohei Ohtani he was accessing the funds for. So that way, any phone calls about, hey, this is a suspicious activity, is this legit, Shohei wouldn't know about it or wouldn't get any emails about it. And even with Shohei's phone, he turned off, allegedly turned off notifications from the bank to his phone. It's just a whole wild story that is,
it's insane,
getting wilder as time goes on.
Yeah.
Then we got to talk a little bit of soccer, because, hey, congratulations to the Wrexham Football Club. That is the team owned by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia fame, because the club they bought a couple years ago got promoted for the second year in a row.
You know.
So for those of you who don't know, there is 7 levels of the English football system. It goes way down, you know, below to from like national leagues all the way up to Premier League, which is, you know, the Liverpools, the Manchester Uniteds, Manchester Cities. When Ryan and Rob bought the team, they were at the 5th level, the National League. They won that level, got to League 2. Then they won League 2. Now they're promoted to League 1. So they've gone from 5th level to the 3rd level. They're only 2 levels away from being in the Premier League with like the who's who of the English football club. So kudos to that team. That is a hell of a thing to pull off, back-to-back consecutive promotions. Side note, if you have not seen Welcome to Wrexham on Hulu or Disney Plus in some parts of the world, give it a watch. It's a great documentary. Mm-hmm. And we got to say goodbye and farewell to a broadcasting legend. That would be John Sterling of the New York Yankees, who announced suddenly that he is retiring effective immediately as of yesterday of this recording. Now, if you're not familiar with who he is, John Sterling was the radio voice of the New York Yankees from 1989 through 2024.
Yeah.
He called 5,420 regular season games, 211 postseason games, and he called 5,060 consecutive games from 1989 through 2019. Think about this, folks. He called every at-bat of Derek Jeter's career.
Mm-hmm.
He was inducted into the New York State Broadcasters Hall of Fame in 2016, and he is a 12-time Emmy Award winner as the host of Yankeeography on the YES Network. If you're not familiar with that, is biography of Yankees players, television format. It's a great series if you're a Yankees fan. Super surprised by this, but then again, the guy's been broadcasting for 60-some-odd years. Like we said, he broadcasted the Yankees games from 89 through just this year. But prior to that, you know, he was doing Atlanta reading from his Wikipedia page, a quote from 1975 through 1980, Sterling announced Brooklyn, New Jersey Nets and New York Islanders games for a host of stations. He continued his talk program. He had a talk program through 1978. He spent 9 years in Atlanta hosting a sports call-in show on WSB Radio and covered the Braves from 1982 to 1987. He also covered the Atlanta Hawks from 1989 through 1981 through 1989. So the dude's been working in radio for like 60 some odd years.
Yeah.
You know, he turns 86 here in July. So, you know, definitely going to miss the guy on the radio because colorful character, great home run calls. But one person I alluded to, Derek Jeter, did say, quote, congrats to John Sterling on an amazing career. I've had the pleasure of listening to and working with John for decades. He's a major part of Yankee history and will be greatly missed, close quote. Now, the team did announce they will be honoring him this Saturday at the Yankee game. Willing to bet they get a plaque made ASAP and put his plaque up in the Yankees in the Monument Park there in Yankee Stadium. And if you think that's a little odd, a little unusual, not for them. Bob Shepard, who was the PA announcer for the Yankees for God, how many years?
Yeah.
Has got a plaque in Monument Park in Yankee Stadium. So congratulations to John Sterling.
Absolutely. Congratulations to him. He's the voice of the Yankees for so many years. Like, that's who I've grown up listening to.
Literally, he was the he was the broadcaster of the Yankees for my entire life.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously recently he'd taken some steps back and wasn't really doing rogue games and wasn't really doing rogue games outside of like something immediate. Like, I know he'd do Boston games and Mets games and Phillies games, but like when the Yankees went, but you know, if they went to San Francisco or Los Angeles, he wouldn't go all the way out there, but you know, definitely going to miss the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely salute to a legend right there.
Burn, baby, burn.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think that's how we just got to end the show. I was going to say quickly about the Rangers. We clinched the President's Cup.
Hell yeah.
We are set to go into the playoffs. So tonight as we were recording, we're going to find out who we're going to be facing. So Tuesday night is going to have a lot of action going on with the NHL, and it's going to really shape up of who is going to be where for the playoffs. If it ends right now and no games played tonight for whatever reason, the Rangers got Washington first round. So the road to the Stanley Cup comes through Madison Square Garden. Blue Shirt Nation, stand the puck up. You know what time it is.
If we start posting on social media in all lowercase letters, you know why.
Exactly. So a lot of things going to be happening there. So just like we ended as we always do, for anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for this weekend of sports for the one and only Pedal 1J.
Fuck the Astros.
I'm your host, Ken M. It's hockey season. Let's go Rangers. Let's go Knicks for basketball as well, too. Thank you for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.
Such waste of time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. 'Cause anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show. You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up. Time fable, everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up. Swiping left and swiping right on people you could know.